Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from John Russell and Brian Lynn. Later, Steve Ember will present The Making of a Nation. But first, the COVID-19 crisis caused public schools in the United States to shut their doors in March. But that did not mean the school year ended early. Instead, educators quickly developed, trained for, and established emergency distance teaching operations, many employing e-learning elements. Most school systems restarted operations within a few weeks and completed the year by late June. But the change to virtual learning settings was difficult for many teachers and produced mixed results for students across the country. Amy Rodriguez-Webb, a teacher in the state of Georgia, was among those who had a rough transition to online education. So, like many other teachers, she is working now to improve her e-teaching before the new school year opens in the fall. Rodriguez-Webb bought camera equipment and a large new writing board. She set up a room in her house for broadcasting lessons. And she recently started 3 weeks of training in online teaching along with other educators in the Cobb County School District.
As COVID-19 continues to spread in the U.S., distance learning efforts are being included in a growing number of plans for the coming school year. Many school systems are facing pressure to improve after the educational losses of last school year. But investment in training is uneven across school systems. Some have offered new guidance on distance teaching, but many educators feel unsupported. Richard Fertig is an education technology researcher at Kent State University in Ohio. He told the AP that wealthier areas have used the summer to train teachers both on technology and on how to get the best performance from students who are learning at least partly online. Teachers in those areas will do well, he said. But he worries about teachers in poorer areas. They've either been given nothing or they've been told, here's the tools we bought for you, with very little support on how to use them, he said.
Linda Mullen is Communications Director for the Washington Education Association, a union of teachers in the Northwestern state. It recently carried out an opinion study involving 1,500 of its members. Mullen said 79% of them said additional training is necessary if distance learning operations are required in the new school year. Another 23% reported they would need major career development or training. In New York, recent public opinion studies show that parents grew increasingly dissatisfied with distance learning as the school year progressed last spring. Dia Bryant is deputy director for the Education Trust New York, which did the studies. We kind of just threw them out there and gave them a Zoom link or gave them a Google Hangout or a Google Classroom, she said, of the state's teachers. She added, "We need better professional learning for them."
Some school systems are ending summer break for teachers earlier than usual, so they can get more training in distance learning. Cobb County, Georgia, is among them. Teacher Rodriguez Webb said the school system ordered teachers back to work 2 weeks earlier than in past years. A statement from Cobb County Schools says the administration will make sure teachers have the tools, resources, and training to help students succeed, no matter the classroom setting.
Some parents have asked for schools to reopen fully. They argue that distance learning cannot equal the quality of an in-school experience. Christina Higley, a mother of three in Webster, New York, says education will suffer if teachers do their jobs online. She added, "They can train them all that they want. They could give them the millions of dollars and tools for online learning. They could do 6 weeks of intense training. There is still going to be children who can't learn that way, and the teachers aren't going to be able to change that, no matter what they do from afar."
Pygmy hogs, the world's smallest and rarest wild pig, are under a virus lockdown, but it has nothing to do with the coronavirus. Officials in India are restricting the movement of pygmy hogs because of the country's first outbreak of African swine fever. There are nearly 300 pygmy hogs living in the northeastern state of Assam. But scientists fear the virus could destroy these rare animals. Adult pygmy hogs are very small. They grow to a height of about 25 centimeters. Pygmy hogs were thought to have died out in the 1960s. But over the past 20 to 30 years, a captive breeding program and other protective efforts have increased their numbers. There is no vaccine or cure for the disease that has already killed over 16,000 domestic pigs, said Pradeep Gogoi, an Assam state official. Domestic animals are bred and trained to accept the care of human beings. Officials confirmed that African swine fever reached India on May 18th. Scientists restricted entry to the pygmy hog breeding centers and took other steps, said Parag Deka. He heads the Pygmy Hog Conservation Program. The program is a project led by Indian officials, the Britain-based Dural Wildlife Conservation Trust, and a local not-for-profit group. Deka told the Associated Press that the virus could possibly destroy the whole pygmy hog population. The virus spreads mainly by direct contact between pigs. It can also spread through infected meat or other materials. Linda Dixon has been studying the virus at the Purbright Institute in Britain. She explained that a vaccine for the swine fever is probably 2 or 3 years away. Scientists have set up 2 security fences at each of Assam state's breeding centers. No visitors are permitted, and cars cannot be left at the centers. Workers who live outside the centers must leave their shoes at the entrance when they arrive. They must wash and clean themselves and then put their feet in a special kind of cleaning solution. Then they can put on clean shoes to go inside. Pygmy hogs are among the few mammals, and the only pig, that build large nests out of dried grass. They live in these nests in families of 4 or 5. The virus threat also means a change of diet for the rare pigs. While these animals still eat fruits and grains, they cannot eat vegetables that grow underground. This is because the virus survives longer in soil. I'm John Russell.
A new study shows that heat waves can cause fish and other creatures in the world's oceans to travel thousands of kilometers in search of cooler waters. Scientists at the U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, reported on the study last week. Their research is based on a new way of measuring heat waves. It is called thermal displacement. A research paper describing the process appeared in the publication Nature. NOAA notes that earlier research has centered on how hot weather can increase ocean surface temperatures over time. Heat waves can cause changes to the ocean environment, killing large numbers of seabirds and affecting corals and other sea life. Thermal displacement measures how far fish, whales, and other mobile species must travel to find cooler ocean surface temperatures. The measurement depends on the rate at which temperature changes across the ocean. Research scientist Michael Jacox calls thermal displacement a powerful new way of looking at ocean heat waves. When the environment changes, many species move, he said in a statement. This research helps us understand and measure the degree of change they may be responding to. Jacox is with the NOAA Southwest Fisheries Science Center in California. Heat waves can add to the difficulties the world's oceans are already facing from long-term warming linked to climate change. The scientists examined information related to ocean heat waves from 1982 to 2019. They looked at the displacement of different species during these events. In some places, cooler water would not be far from warmer seas, such as where different parts of the ocean meet, the study found. But in tropical areas, where temperature changes are usually small, some sea creatures would need to travel more than 2,000 kilometers to find cooler water. Jacox says fast-moving displacement of sea life can affect many kinds of sea creatures and have human costs as well. Some of the most mobile species, many fish, whales, and turtles, hold great value for humans, he said. Fisheries and tourism could be harmed, and threatened species could also face displacement, he added. Michael Alexander of NOAA's Physical Sciences Laboratory helped lead the research team. He said the study may give us an idea how the ecosystem may change in the future. This could, for example, help predict how far fishermen would have to travel to reach the fish they want to harvest. He said, I'm Brian Lynn.
For years, our American history series, The Making of a Nation, has been one of the most popular programs from VOA Learning English. The series started in 1969. Today, we start our series again from the beginning. Generations of schoolchildren have been taught that Christopher Columbus discovered the New World. In fact, the second Monday in October is celebrated as a national holiday to honor the European explorer. But October also has a lesser-known observance. October 9th is Leif Erikson Day. So who was Leif Erikson? Today, Steve Ember tells us about him and other early European explorers.
Leif Erikson was a Norse explorer who sailed around the northeastern coast of what we now call North America about 1,000 years ago. He and his crew returned to Greenland with news of a place he called Vinland. Following his explorations, a few settlements were built. Experts digging in eastern Canada in the 1960s found the remains of a village with houses like those in Greenland, Iceland, and Norway. But the Norse did not establish any permanent settlements in North America. Today, as we relaunch our series, we begin with the story of early European explorers in North America. In the 11th century, Europe was beginning a period of great change. One reason was the religious wars known as the Crusades. These were military campaigns by Christians to force Muslims out of the Holy Land in the Middle East. The Crusades began at the end of the 11th century. They continued for about 200 years. One effect of the presence of European armies in the Middle East was to increase trade. This trade was controlled by businessmen in Venice and other city-states in Italy. The businessmen earned large profits by supplying the warring armies and by bringing goods from the East into Europe. When the European crusaders returned home, they brought with them some new and useful products. These included spices, perfumes, silk cloth, and steel products. These goods became highly valued all over Europe. The increased trade with the East led to the creation and growth of towns along the supply roads. It also created a large number of rich European businessmen. The European nations were growing. They developed armies and governments. These had to be paid for with taxes collected from the people. By the 15th century, European countries were ready to explore new parts of the world. The first explorers were the Portuguese. By 1400, they wanted to control the eastern spice trade. European businessmen did not want to continue paying Venetian and Arab traders for their costly spices. They wanted to set up trade themselves. If they could sail to Asia directly for these products, the resulting trade would bring huge profits. The leader of Portugal's exploration efforts was Prince Henry, a son of King John I. He was interested in sea travel and exploration. He became known as Henry the Navigator. Prince Henry brought experts to his country and studied the sciences involved in exploration. He built an observatory to study the stars. Portuguese sea captains sailed their ships down the west coast of Africa, hoping to find a path to India and East Asia. They finally found the end of the African continent, the area called the Cape of Good Hope. It took the Portuguese only about 50 years to take control of the spice trade. They established trading colonies in Africa, the Persian Gulf, India, and China. Improvements in technology helped them succeed. One improvement was a new kind of ship. It could sail more easily through storms and winds. Other inventions, like the compass, allowed them to sail out of sight of land. The Portuguese also armed their ships with modern cannon. They used these weapons to battle Muslim and East Asian traders. The other European nations would not let Portugal control this spice trade for long, however. Spain's Queen Isabella and King Ferdinand agreed to provide ships, crew, and supplies for an exploration by an Italian named Christopher Columbus. Columbus thought the shortest way to reach the East was to sail west across the Atlantic Ocean. He was right, but he also was wrong. He believed the world was much smaller than it is. He did not imagine the existence of another continent and another huge ocean between Europe and East Asia. Columbus and a crew of 88 men left Spain on August 3, 1492, in three ships, the Niña, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria. By October 12th, the sailors stood on land again on an island that Columbus named San Salvador. He explored the island and the nearby islands of what are now known as Cuba and Hispaniola. He believed they were part of the coast of East Asia, which was then called the Indies. He called the people he found there Indians. Columbus left about 40 men on San Salvador Island to build a fort from the wood of one of the ships. He returned to Spain with birds, plants, gold, and people captured from the land he explored. Columbus was welcomed as a hero when he returned to Spain in March of 1493. Columbus sailed again across the Atlantic to the Caribbean 5 months later. He found that the fort built by his men had been destroyed by fire. Columbus did not find any of his men. But this time, he had many more men and all the animals and equipment needed to start a colony on Hispaniola. 7 months later, he sent five ships back to Spain. They carried Indians to be sold as slaves. Columbus himself also returned to Spain. Columbus made another trip in 1498. This time, he saw the coast of South America. But the settlers on Hispaniola were so unhappy with conditions in their new colony, they sent Columbus back to Spain as a prisoner. Spain's rulers pardoned him. In 1502, Columbus made his final voyage to what some by then were calling the New World. He stayed on the island of Jamaica until he returned home 2 years later. During all his trips, Columbus explored islands and waterways, searching for that passage to the Indies. He never found it, nor did he find spices or great amounts of gold. Yet he always believed that he had found the Indies. He refused to recognize that it really was a new world. Evidence of this was all around him. Strange plants unknown in either Europe or Asia, and a different people who did not understand any language spoken in the East. Columbus's voyages, however, opened up the New World. Others later explored all of North America. Now, you may be wondering about the name of this new land. If Christopher Columbus led the explorations, then why is it called America? The answer lies with the name of another Italian explorer, Amerigo Vespucci. He visited the coast of South America in 1499. He wrote stories about his experiences that were widely read in Europe. In 1507, a German mapmaker, Martin Waldseemüller, read Vespucci's stories. He decided that the writer had discovered the New World and thought it should be called America in his honor. And so it was. Spanish explorers sought to find gold and power in the New World. They also wanted to spread Christianity, which they considered the only true religion. The first of these Spanish explorers was Juan Ponce de León. He landed in North America in 1513. He explored the eastern coast of what is now the state of Florida. He was searching for a special kind of water that Europeans believed existed. They believed that this water could make old people young again. Ponce de León never did find the Fountain of Youth. Also in 1513, Vasco Núñez de Balboa crossed the Isthmus of Panama and reached the Pacific Ocean. In 1519, Hernán Cortés landed an army in Mexico. His army destroyed the ancient empire of the Aztec Indians. That same year, Ferdinand Magellan began his 3-year voyage around the world. And in the 1530s, the forces of Francisco Pizarro destroyed the Inca Indian Empire in Peru. 10 years later, Francisco Vázquez de Coronado had marched as far north as what is now the American state of Kansas, and then west to the Grand Canyon. About the same time, Hernando de Soto reached the Mississippi River. 50 years after Columbus first landed at San Salvador, Spain claimed a huge area of America. The riches of these new lands made Spain the greatest power in Europe and the world.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.